you stay behind. There's junkies and monsters and rateros in there that'll cut off your legs and fuck you as you die. I am not kidding you. Stay close to me. Nayeli, you're the leader, right behind me. Atomico will cover the end of the line. Single file. Hustle. Can you hustle? You better fucking hustle like you never hustled before. If the Migra catches you, they'll crack your heads. If it looks like they're gonna catch us, you don't know me. I'm not a coyote, just a guy from Sonora looking for work at the racetrack tending horses. You got that? You rat me out, and my socios will hunt you down and cut your throats. If we get separated, you girlies, you run for the road and hope the Migra comes along before the rateros get you. Don't be out there alone. If you get lost, I'm not going to come looking for you. Mama's far away. Stay behind me, or you're on your own, and there's no negotiating. All right. Straight, arroyo, right for 50 yards, hard left. We'll be going down a canyon for a mile, and then we'll get to a bridge. We can rest under that bridge. If the rateros jump us, and they've got guns or knives, I ain't dying for you. No way. I'm gone. Good luck, cabrones. Give them what they want, and that includes your money. If you want to live. You, Tacho. Maybe you'll be lucky. Maybe there's faggots in the canyons, too, and they won't cut your legs. Maybe you can blow them. What, have I offended you? Ay, 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 que lastima. I'll tell you what will offend you worse. Having the tendons sliced in your legs so you flop like a fish. Having 10 filthy junkies or gangbangers or white gangsters rape you and take your money. How's that for offensive? God damn it, you're wetbacks now. Nobody gives a shit about you. So stick to me like ticks, and I'll get you through. When I tell you we're there, and I'm heading home. No whining, no complaining. I will take you far enough so you can figure it out for yourselves. You ain't paying me real money. You want the deluxe crossing, you pay for it. Put you in the trunk of a car. But we're not those coyotes in Libertad. I'll get you in, but you have to take it from there. If you get caught and deported, I ain't giving you your money back. Me vale madre. Tough shit. Life is hard. But if you want to pay me again, orale, I'll take you in again. Got it? Any questions? No? Good. Are we ready? Next stop, San Diego, Califas. Los Pinches Unaites. When the next Border Patrol vehicle came down the dusty trail across the fence, the gathered runners pelted it with stones. Suddenly, three other trucks appeared, and the agents leaned across their roofs and fired tear gas grenades over the fence. The coyote took off running. And before Nayeli could ask what was going on, Atomico had them up and running too. Clouds of choking smoke swirled across the hill, stinking and choking. People ran from the border and charged between the small houses as if walls and fences could protect them from the fumes. Boys with rags tied over their mouths and noses laughed and danced, taunting the agents, throwing more stones and bottles. The coyote stood with his fists raised, shouting, "Act of war! Act of war!" Atomico was laughing. He'd gotten them to a perch far enough away from the gas that only Tacho's eyes were watering. "Welcome to Palestine!" he yelled.
"I've never seen anything like this," Nayeli said.
"I love it," Atomico replied. Tacho hawked and spit. "You don't see this on TV," he said.
"Sábado Gigante," said Nayeli. "Today we feature Chinese jugglers, the song stylings of Ricardo Arjona and Juanes, and Border War."
The girls laughed, sort of, more nervous than amused. They had stepped into the apocalypse and wanted nothing more than to be bored in Tres Camarones. It took about a half hour for the gas to fade and drift away. The runners, wiping their eyes, moved back to the fence. The coyote signaled them and walked back to his spot.
It was as dark as Nayeli had ever seen it. Far to the west, she could see the eerie hazy glow of searchlights on their tall poles. She coughed, dust clogging her throat, small tendrils of the gas still lingering in the air. They huddled on their haunches behind the coyote, hands on each other's backs like monkeys. She clutched the coyote's shirt tail. He slapped her hand away. "Don't mess up my clothes," he said. There was no whispering. She'd thought there would be whispering. Behind Tacho, Atomico squatted with his staff across his knees. "If we get separated," he said, "I'll meet you where they drop off the deportees in Tijuana."
"What do you mean, meet us?"
"Nobody's catching Atomico," Atomico proclaimed. "I'm not going in a border patrol cage. Never been in a cage and will never go in a cage."
Nayeli was suddenly scared to face the border without the warrior.
"I will be there," he said. "Come back to me, brown girl."
"Where will you be?" Nayeli said.
"Don't worry. They all get left in the same spot. I'll wait for you there. Nobody will touch you."
"Our hero," said Yolo, perhaps not completely sober yet, but so scared that her buzz was evaporating through her pores.
"Listen," the coyote said.
They heard an engine approach. Headlights made pinholes in the wall light up like stars. The engine receded. The truck moved on.
"Let's go. We have about 15 minutes.
He squat-walked to the fence and knocked the dry bushes aside and yanked a section of fence loose. It squealed loudly. He popped through and was gone. Nayeli followed, trying to make herself small, but she caught her scalp on the edges of the metal and cut a small wound into her forehead. Blood ran into her right eye, and though she wiped it away, it looked like she was weeping blood. Vampi went through on her hands and knees.
"My rose!" she cried. "I dropped my rose!"
Yolo shoved her. She followed. Tacho crawled through and panicked for a moment when he saw no one on the dirt road. Then he remembered the arroyo across the way, and he ran and plunged through the creosote bushes and came flying down upon the group like a cat flying off a roof.
"Hey, idiot!" the coyote cried as he crashed into them.
Atomico stepped through the gap, bent back to the doorway, and kicked the metal back into place. He might as well have rung a bell, it was so loud. He raised his staff over his head and yelled,
"Atomico is in the house,"
in trash-dump English. He swung his staff all around and laid it across his shoulders and strolled across the road.
"So much for secrecy," the coyote said. And he was off.
Nayeli had to run to keep up. She clutched a tattered wad of tissue to her forehead with one hand and knocked branches out of her face with the other. Vampi yelled and trotted after her, and Yolo grabbed the back of Vampi's shirt to hang on. Vampi took the brunt of the whipping branches Nayeli charged through. She cried out 100 times as she got smacked. She was alarmed to see a pregnant woman running beside her. Where did she come from? The woman held her belly up with both hands and charged ahead. Tacho was a few paces behind them all, watching the pale ghosts of the running girls. They seemed to vanish. He knew they'd found the left turn. He passed it, fumbled back, and heard them breaking through the brush in the dark. He never saw any gap. It was all just more shadows. Headlights suddenly cut across the valley from the road along the fence. Tacho plunged into the darkest clump of shadow and prayed he didn't step on a rattlesnake or fall into some pit full of tarantulas. Atomico had completely vanished. Vampi was out of breath.
"Ay, ay, ay," she gasped as she ran.
The ground was rough. They tripped,
twisted their ankles. The pregnant woman suddenly grabbed Vampi and held her up. Vampi was startled at first, then leaned on the stronger older woman. She might have been an angel. She might have been the wraith of a murdered paisana come from the shadows to save them. Vampi surrendered to her fate and ran. Nayeli had to slow down for the coyote. He was a smoker, and he wasn't really in shape. She could hear him wheezing. If she'd known the way, she would have pushed him aside. Her legs were like steel springs. She could run cross-country all night. She was pretty sure Yolo could keep up, but she was trapped behind this slow, malodorous, coughing male.
"Hurry up!" she said.
He rounded a curve, Nayeli right on his back. The moon made the sandy path glow a faint violet gray. They came in sight of the bridge the coyote had told them about. It was low, and the coyote dove under it and clutched his chest and gasped as if he were dying. Nayeli crawled in beside him, then received Vampi and the mystery woman. Yolo dove in next. After about a minute, Tacho was heard announcing, "Oh, God!" outside as he staggered in and fell in the sand.
"Are we all right?" Nayeli said.
Yolo made a muscle and gave her a double thumbs up. Vampi sighed and lay back in the sand. Tacho said, "Oh, yes, mi hija, I am just wonderful." The mystery woman said, "I am fine." "Who are you?" the coyote demanded. The pregnant woman said, "Candelaria." "You owe me money," he said.
"I have no money."
"What? Do you think this is a Christian charity, Mora? You think I do this for fun?" "What are you going to do?" Candelaria asked. "Walk me back to the fence?" "Shit," he said. Before they could argue more, engines sounded above them. A truck went by, then a big bus. The bridge groaned. "They're transporting prisoners," the coyote said. A third engine came along. They listened as it came over the bridge. The coyote put his finger to his lips. "Shh," he said. The engine stopped.
"Chingalo," he said.
They heard the radio. They heard the door of the SUV open and slam. The coyote was gone like a tatter of fog. He didn't even make a sound. Just vanished.
"Hey,"
Nayeli whispered. A walkie-talkie muttered above them. She heard a gringo voice say, "Arroyo, Seco, overpass, over." A bright flashlight beam hit the gullies around them like a ray from a spaceship. Yolo and Vampi and Tacho held hands so hard they thought they'd break their fingers. Vampi was trembling. The light clicked off. Silence. A stream of water came off the bridge and hit the ground before them. The migra was peeing! They stifled their giggles. They couldn't believe it. His stream arced over them and formed a puddle. They moved back so they wouldn't have to touch it. The stream died out. Then, spritz, 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 they laughed into their hands. "Clear," he said into his radio, and slammed the door and drove away. Tacho fell on the ground and laughed with his feet in the air. "Welcome," he gasped, "to America." Chapter 16. They stood in the wash beneath the bridge in a loose group. The coyote was gone. "Now what?" Tacho asked. Nayeli had to take charge, she knew that, but how? Take charge of what? "That way is east," she said. "I think that's all desert and mountains and stuff." "And stuff," Candelaria said. "So we should go west, right?"
Right, Nayeli, said Yolo. We need to go toward the city.
Right.
They stood some more, frozen to the spot. Tacho, for one, recognized they were not heading anywhere. They had used up their momentum.
We're going to an American hotel, he announced.
Oh, yes, cried Vampi.
We're going to get hot showers and nice American beds.
An MTV, Vampi enthused.
I can't believe this chick, Nayeli said to nobody in particular.
In the United States, Candelaria said, you can flush the toilet paper down the toilet.
They eyed her skeptically. Everybody in Mexico knew that toilet paper went in a basket by the sink. The plumbing couldn't deal with paper.
Candelaria shrugged. What can I say? She said. They are advanced here.
Well, then, Tacho announced, I will flush the toilets, too.
Vámonos, Nayeli ordered.
She climbed the slope and started to walk along the dark road.
Watch for lights, Candelaria said.
They trudged along, and their fantasies started to come out into the air, the mixed gabble of voices forming a tapestry of sound. Ice cream, hamburgers, bubble baths, American beer, the eyes, Disneylandia. An ersatz owl began to hoot in the distance.
Nayeli shook her head and laughed in spite of herself. That crazy Atomico, signaling from the bushes.
Cantiflas is the greatest movie star in the world.
Yolo, you're crazy. Everybody knows Johnny Depp is the greatest movie star.
Aye, Nayeli, there you go with your damn Johnny Depp.
What about Banderas?
Vampi, when did you decide you liked Antonio Banderas?
Oy, Vampi, Banderas could be your father.
No way. Did you see Banderas in Interview with the Vampire?
Oh, no, Mora. Not that vampire stuff now.
Oh, really, Mr. Smarty Pants? So who, in your fine opinion, is the best Tacho?
Mi hija, don't embarrass yourself. Es la strip.
And you, Candelaria?
This is stupid. You should be quiet. You're not strolling in the park, you know.
They dashed to the bushes and hid when a helicopter flew over. It made a terrible racket, its rotors thwacking the air as it slid sideways across the sky above them and turned slowly in midair. A hard beam shot out of it and raked the distant hills. The dark that hit when the beam snapped off was almost as strong as silence. They blinked. The helicopter angled away and churned farther down the line.
Like a giant dragonfly, Vampi intoned, as if they all hadn't thought that very thing.
They walked a quarter mile and rounded a bend and were illuminated by the brutal glare of two headlights and a spotlight that switched on and blinded them. The truck was parked right in the middle of the road. If the lights hadn't come on, they would have walked into it.
Hello, amigos, a voice called from behind the lights. This is the U.S. Border Patrol. You are in the United States of America illegally. You are under arrest. Everybody come on over and keep your hands on your heads. Slowly now, stay calm. If you have papeles, now's the time to break 'em out.
He got on his radio, spoke some numerical coordinates.
Said, I've acquired 5 clients, over.
The helicopter came back and hovered above them. Its prop wash knocked Nayeli into Yolo. She squinted up into the light it shot down at them. They were caught in light. They couldn't move. The copter moved off and scanned the scrub around them. Its deafening noise receded until she could hear voices again.
Agent Carl Anderson was shining his light in Tacho's face, and he had one hand on Vampi's arm. Another SUV was bouncing at them from the north. Good old Kenny Smith was over there, getting out his big flashlight. He and Carl went to the same Bible study when they weren't out in the bush collecting bodies.
"Yankee bastards!"
came a wail from the south. They all looked.
"Cabrones!"
"What the heck?" said Carl Anderson. The helicopter was lighting up Atomico. He stood at the edge of an arroyo near the fence. Nayeli could not believe they'd walked so much and were still right by the fence. How was that possible? In the dark, she'd imagined they were already halfway to Los Angeles. Atomico swung his pole at the copter.
"Come down here and get me, puto!" he was yelling.
The Camarones crew started to giggle. The Migra agent stared over there and shook his head. "What's wrong with that guy?" he asked Tacho in Spanish.
"He's an idiot," Tacho said.
"You know that knucklehead?" asked Kenny Smith.
"He's our guardian angel," Vampi said. "I'm a vampire. We're on a mission from God."
"Great," Carl said. Kenny looked the friends over, looked back at Atomico, shook his head, and said to his cohort, "This ain't a full moon, is it? 'Cause the crazies are out tonight." He put his handcuffs back on his belt.
"Behave," he told Tacho, wagging his finger.
"I will. It's that one out there you have to watch out for." They all watched Atomico do some daring staff moves on his little hill. He danced backward, holding his staff across his chest. The two Border Patrol guys seemed to be really enjoying the show.
"Sweet moves," Kenny commented to his friend.
"I am Atomico," the warrior shouted to them.
He struck his chest. He raised his staff. He cried,
"Nayeli Rifa!"
They were all impressed. Nayeli rules. She blushed a little. The agents looked at her and raised their eyebrows in appreciation.
"You Nayeli?"
Kenny asked. She nodded.
"A love story," said Carl.
"We are just friends."
Atomico turned and he ran. And he greatly pleased all the gathered watchers when he stuck the end of his staff in the dirt and pole-vaulted over the fence and vanished back into Mexico.
"I'll be darned," both Border Patrol agents said.
They were herded into the back of the Migra expedition. Kenny helped Candelaria up.
"Watch your head," he said.
"Hey, didn't I see you last week?" Nayeli didn't know the agent spoke Spanish. Candelaria nodded.
"I bet you were happy to see me again," he quipped.
"Don't you ever take a day off?" she asked.
"I always take Sunday off. Try coming back on Sunday."
He closed the back door and climbed in. Candelaria had her face against the metal grill.
"I will try on Sunday," she called.
"Oh, good," he replied.
He muttered into his microphone. Nayeli heard, "Five bodies," and "clear," and "over." The truck pulled out.
"I will send you a postcard,"
Candelaria shouted over the engine noise. The agent laughed. They pulled a brush-clearing U-turn and got back on the road and chased their headlight beams down the dark valley. They stopped and watched two Migra agents beat the holy hell out of a boy in a checkered shirt.
"Well," Kenny said, "he must have done something bad."
He seemed embarrassed.
Yolo and Vampi started to cry. They were terrified and mortified. It was not in their life plans to be arrested and dragged around in the back of a wagon like criminals. Kenny jumped out and helped the two in the road subdue their client. He put his knee in the small of the kid's back and pinned him to the dirt while they yanked his arms behind him and cuffed him. They got him back up. Blood was running from his nose. He tried to kick the nearest agent. The agent theatrically shook his finger in the boy's face and hauled him into the gloom. Kenny returned to the truck and said, "It's not an easy job, you know. Why don't you folks stay home and make my life easier?" Tacho laughed. Kenny liked Tacho. "I wish I had stayed home," Tacho said. "I can't keep my hair combed up here." They watched the vehicle with the bloodied boy drive off. "That, right there," their driver announced, "was your typical bad boy."
"We are not bad, senor," Nayeli said.
"Oh, I know," he said. "You are Nayeli, right? The one the Olympic pole vaulter was hollering about?" He turned and winked at Tacho. "Nayeli," he said, "you Rifa." He offloaded them at a big school bus lit by spotlights. Tacho jumped down by himself. He helped Yolo and Vampi, who seemed to be collapsing in fear. Nayeli jumped down, pushing Tacho's helping hand away. The Border Patrol agents helped Candelaria down. Carl Anderson was there.
"Mother," he said to the pregnant woman.
"Senor," she replied.
He supervised the handover, and armed men herded them onto the bus, where they took seats among tired men who smelled of smoke and dirt and sweat. Candelaria ended up several seats behind them, and they lost sight of her and did not find her again. There was a sick man slumped in the front seat, wheezing and groaning. A Migra agent gave him water and shone a light in his face. There was a commotion near the front door, and suddenly agents pulled their sidearms and backed a Libertad bad boy down to his knees. He was hauled away, coughing in the bus. Nayeli was amazed to hear snoring. Some of the men were dead asleep. Young guys joked and called insults to each other, cursed the Migra. They made kissing sounds at Yolo and Vampi. Nayeli got up and walked to their seat and stood there, facing the boys, looking like an Aztec warrior priestess. Before the bus could roll, though, the Migra matron, who was driving with an armed cohort, told her she had to sit down. But someone had taken her seat, so she sat on Tacho's lap.
"Everybody," the guard with the big shotgun announced, "we are going in to register you. A quick interview, and you will all be going home. Stay calm."
Tacho said nothing. Nayeli couldn't tell if he was angry or depressed. Vampi was so scared she could not stop crying. Yolo was so mad she wanted to slap Nayeli's face and go back home. Tacho was thinking, the United States is a little disappointing so far. ICE agents, customs agents, soldiers in camouflage, Border Patrol agents, agents with DEA on their windbreakers, EMS ambulance techs, dogs, white men in slacks and black ties, a San Diego City cop, men in red T-shirts, frightening men in black outfits. It looked to Nayeli like one of those boring old James Bond movies, where 007 dropped inside a big plastic volcano to blow up the communist spaceship. But this one was more scary, because they were in it. The guns were real. The lights were too bright. The gates of the holding pen slammed loudly.
All the young Mexican guys were yelling. Suddenly, Nayeli was separated from her friends as the tide of bodies split and sent them into two different groups. Vampi looked like she was drowning, turning once in the tide and going under. Yolo caught Nayeli's eye and stared at her, sending venomous lightning through the air. Nayeli had known her long enough to read the look. "You did this to us," she was saying. Someone put his hand on her rear and squeezed. She spun around, but he was gone. She looked back, and Yolo had vanished. A hand brushed her breast. Signs in Spanish asked them to follow requests, to report any violations to the agent in charge, to report any criminal activity in the pen, to make a free phone call if they had representation or needed to report human rights violations to the Mexican consulate. Many of those in the cage just stared at the floor. Most of the people herded into the pens were just like them, just people. Small, brown, tired people. Nayeli was stunned to see mothers with children, the kids weeping and snot-faced. She heard indigenous tongues in the pen, shamanic-sounding utterances that felt a million years old to her, sounds of jungle and temple and human sacrifice. Nayeli looked at the Migra agents through the iron mesh. Big men, happy, bright-faced men, shiny and crisp, green uniforms, short hair, mustaches. What made them different from her? She could not tell. They moved around with real efficiency, she noted. Sensei Pei would have appreciated their economy of motion, their obvious ease with their strength, and a woman Migra agent. Nayeli was fascinated by her. She had a big, fat gun on her hip, and she was as short as Nayeli herself, but she was also stout and moved like a little tractor. A black man. Nayeli had never seen a black man, outside of Irma's porch television or the Pedro Infante on movie night. She was amazed by his hair, gray and white, tight to his skull. His skin shone, and she was astounded to realize he had the same skin tone as her, just a shade darker. She knew she was a sweet tanned color, but she always imagined herself as white. He saw her looking at him. He stopped by the gate and peered in at her.
"You eyeballing me?" he said.
"Perdón?"
"Usted me está mirando?"
he said in Spanish.
"Sí."
"Por qué?"
She looked at her feet. "It is your skin," she said. "It is beautiful." He laughed out loud. Just then, her driver came along.
"Hey, Arnie," Kenny called to the black agent. "That's Nayeli. She rules."
"Nayeli, huh?" said Arnie.
He opened the gate.
"Let's get you processed, Nayeli. You can get back to invading the United States in an expeditious manner. Get to you in a minute."
"Kay?" she said. Chapter 17. Agent Arnold Davis had seen it all. After 27 years in government service, he was close enough to retirement that he was bulletproof as far as the bureaucracy went. He had so much retirement built up that if they were to fire him tomorrow, he'd get close to a full salary anyway. It was what he called F-U money. He had sore feet and a bad back. He'd been in counseling twice. He had hemorrhoids, insomnia. His prostate was probably the size of a Krispy Kreme donut. He peed 5 times a night, and it ruined what little sleep he got. and his left knee was shot. Join the Border Patrol. Taste the glamorous life. His wife had left him in 1992, and she'd taken his kids. They didn't talk to him, but they did accept his monthly checks. He drove a Ford pickup, but the gas bill was getting crazy, and he was actually thinking of trading it in. But a USBP senior supervisory agent just didn't belong in a Hyundai. Maybe they'd come up with a hybrid Mustang. He looked around the station and tried to block his sense of smell so he didn't have to breathe in all the sweat, panic, despair, piss. He tried to ignore the ugly lighting that, the older he got, felt more and more like a personal insult to his eyes. As he walked around the floor, holding his limp to the barest minimum so nobody could see it, he was secretly looking into the back of his brain at retirement and escape and Colorado mountains and trout streams. Elk. He wasn't going to shoot them. Just watch them walk on by. Even now, there were not a lot of black agents in the Border Patrol. Hell, there were barely any agents at all. Oh, there were bodies, all right. There were more people in uniform than ever before. Homeland Security had flooded the Border Patrol with gung-ho new Terminators, but they didn't know squat about the border. Not really. How could they? It took a guy 10 years to really get it. Arnie had served at Welton Station in Arizona. It had been a tight little unit of almost 30 guys. Then DHS had started pumping in the fresh bods, and the station swelled to 300 people jammed into the crumbling building. They had to tear it down and build a bigger station, not to hold more wets, but to hold the overflow of agents. Arnie had relocated to Calexico, and now he was on loan to San Diego. He put on his reading glasses to study the papers on his clipboard. He glanced into the cage. The little smiley Mexican girl was looking at him. "My black skin," he said to himself, "is beautiful." He laughed out loud and moved on. The government knew a secret that the American public didn't. The numbers of border crossers were down, across the board. Maybe the fence, maybe the harsh new atmosphere in the U.S., maybe everybody had already fled Mex, like the old guys occasionally joked. But all these new agents were here, pumped, eager for action. The DHS paranoia and training had them searching for terrorists under every desk. Arnie shook his head. They actually believed an atomic bomb would be discovered in one of these backpacks, tucked under the underpants. So they had to do something, now that talk radio and cable TV was so fascinated with every bit of border enforcement, until the next election season, anyway. The suits and the big dogs came up with a great assignment for new Terminators. They were being sent out to arrest wets who were leaving the U.S. for Mexico. Hey, if you can't catch them coming in anymore, bust them when they're doing you a favor and trying to get back out. Arnie thought a lot about that F.U. money. Elk, man. Elk. He came back for Nayeli, crooked a finger at her. Opened the gate for her. "Gracias," she said, shyly grinning. "We're not going on a date," he replied. Photographs, fingerprints. They sat at a table, surrounded by other tables with worried paisanos and bored immigration agents. Arnie made some notes on a form. He wanted to know why she was carrying American money. Drugs? She shook her head. Hooker? No. When Nayeli started to tell him her story, he stopped writing. His mouth hung halfway open.
"Hey," he said to the guy at the next table, "you gotta hear this."
Nayeli told her story again. The agents shook their heads. It was the dumbest thing they'd heard all night. But they handed her all due respect. Nayeli had the most original wet story they'd heard in a week.
"You're taking them back," he said.
"I am here as a service to both our countries," she nodded.
He laughed. He looked around. He dropped his hands on the table.
"Well, well, well," he said.
He laughed again, wiped his eyes.
"Do you not believe me?" she asked.
"Not really, but it's a great story. I'll give you that. Extra points for originality."
She crossed her arms and frowned.
"I am not a liar," she said.
"No, just an illegal immigrant. That makes you so reliable."
"I am not illegal," she insisted. "I am on a mission. I am a patriot."
He put his hand to his brow.
"Okay," he said. "Whatever."
He was thinking. The last time he'd seen his daughter, she was wearing a Congol beret and mouthing hip noises and saying,
"Whatevs, dog."
Dog? Who really said dog anyway? He shook his head. Nayeli was her size and close to her age. Almost her color.
"What am I gonna do with you kids?" he asked no one in particular.
He patted his own arm.
"Thanks for the compliment, by the way," he said.
He got up, gestured for her to rise. The place was loud and awful. He wanted to be in the high country. Snow and ravens standing on the crowns of lightning-struck lodge poles. He had a hold of her arm, but he didn't go to the holding open. He didn't know what he was doing. He was going on instinct. Who could fire him? Who could write him up? He'd go fishing. Arnie bought Nayeli a cold Coke from a battered machine. He bought some Zagnut bars and M&Ms from the agent's machine for her friends. Then he locked her in the holding pen. He stared in at her. She smiled back.
"Don't let me catch your ass again," he warned.
A dog began barking savagely at a small group of young men.
More terrorists, Arnie thought as he walked away, ignoring the whole thing.
Nayeli burned with shame. She had thought the Americanos would be happy to see her.
"We're going back to Tijuana?" Yolo snapped.
They had found each other in the big pen. They never spotted Candelaria. Tacho was feeling his money belt, amazed that nobody had discovered it.
"We're starting all over?" Yolo yelled. "Would you rather be in jail?" Nayeli snapped back. "I would rather be in Tres Camarones," Yolo said. "I would rather be home."
She shoved Nayeli. One of the Migra agents waded into the crowd.
"Hey," he said, "calma."
"Sorry," said Yolo.
"Do I have to separate you?"
"No."
"I'm watching."
"Sorry."
He signaled another agent, and they stayed close enough to the friends to intervene should trouble erupt.
"Great," Nayeli said. "Thanks."
"Don't get smart with me, girl," Yolo replied.
"Thanks for what? I didn't get us arrested. I didn't get us deported."
"Come on now," Tacho said. He was stroking poor Vampi's tangled vampire hair.
"Let's not fight."
Tacho thought sadly about La Mano Caída. He was missing the counter and the drink cooler,
the cement floor and the stinking evil iguana in the window that snuck in every day to steal his mango and pineapple slices. He was suddenly worried that Aunt Irma wasn't taking proper care of the lizard.
"I can't believe this," Yolo said.
"I know," Tacho said. His voice could be soothing when he wanted it to be. "I know." Yolo crossed her arms around her stomach and huffed. She had tears in her eyes. The people jammed in with her, bumped into her, and pushed against her. She had never hated people as much as she did right then. One tear escaped her eye and ran down her cheek. Nayeli reached out for her to give her a hug. She resisted, then gave in.
"I'm sorry," Nayeli whispered.
Tacho said, "Just think of home. That's what I do when I feel bad. I think of home." It was so noisy. Fences were clanking. People shuffled, muttered. The buses pulled up, and the agents were yelling, and the pneumatic doors were huffing open, and the chain link was rattling. Migra agents moved through, telling them it was time to go home. The friends had to yell to be heard.
"What?" Yolo shouted.
"Home!" Tacho yelled. It was so absurd he started to grin. He yelled as loud as he could, "Think about home!"
"What about home?" Vampi called.
"I think about la mano caída," Tacho yelled.
"Qué?"
"La mano caída!"
Instantly, the Border Patrol agents froze. "Al-Qaeda," the nearest one said.
"What?"
said Tacho. "Did you say Al-Qaeda?"
"No, dije la mano caída,"
Tacho shouted a little too loud. The agents jumped on him, wrestling him to the ground. "This guy's Al-Qaeda!" People shouted and surged away. The gates stood open, and the bus loading began. The three girls were forced away from Tacho, who was wrestling with a pile of ICE agents. People shoved. The girls shrieked. A man's voice yelled, "Get them out of here!" They were borne onto the bus. Agents were wading into the crowd from all sides, heading for Tacho. The bus doors slammed. The bus lurched away, and the girls were trapped inside, watching them manhandle Tacho. They sobbed and banged on the glass. But the bus did not stop. Part 2. Norte. Chapter 18. Morning. Tijuana street toughs, with nothing better to do, entertained themselves by jeering at deportees as they came back to Mexico, tired and dirty and downtrodden. Old hands among the returnees knew the border game and faded away and vanished among the tough guys and headed back to the fences. But the fresh meat, the crying ones, the hunched and scuttling guilty-looking ones, they were the source of sport and derision. The barracudas could smell helplessness on them, and the bad guys laughed and flicked cigarettes and called insults and offered to relieve the women of any sexual tension they might be feeling. It was better than TV, better than drinking in the cantina to watch the weeping and broken stumble and look about themselves, lost. Anything could happen. Who would know? Do-gooders? Missionaries? The Red Cross? Everyone was tired of these wanderers, anyone who mattered anyway. These men said dreadful things, and boys joined in because that was what boys do. Some of the women had lost track of their children and had come back sobbing and frantic, and if they hoped for help or compassion back in border zone Tijuana, they were mistaken. The street toughs merely pointed and laughed.
Beyond the few nasty bastards at the fences, there were worse men waiting. Coyotes selling the immediate return. Bottom feeders. How much could a deportee pay? Chances were not much, but they found ways. After all, they had nowhere to go. This homecoming reminded them that they had no home. Nobody but Nayeli's gang were on a quest to protect and repopulate their villages. They were there for food, to send money home. These invaders, so infamous on American talk radio, were hopeless and frantic with starving compulsion. So they would make whatever desperate deals their guide suggested, or they would borrow money or dig hidden rolls of cash from their own orifices and gamble their last stores to try again. And the agents of despair were there for them, offering an immediate return. They didn't care where the money or the promises or the barter of the bodies came from. They could all be washed off. All they offered was the simple promise. I can take you back. Back to Libertad, or beyond, east into the mountain or desert wasteland, where the legendary fence merely stopped. There was nothing out there but a few traffic barriers and fires and rattlesnakes and cowboys, and among these hustlers, there milled taxi drivers heading nowhere. On some days, a pimp might try to recruit a young woman or a boy with promises of quick money, short service, and protection. Mostly lies. The good people of Tijuana went about their business, looking away from the returnees, hurrying on into their days. Most citizens of Tijuana had never seen a pimp, and wouldn't give him the time of day if they did. Outside of the borderlands, Mexicans seemed to believe that every young man in Tijuana was a hustler or a coyote. But most of the citizens of Tijuana had never seen a coyote and wouldn't know one if they saw him. They didn't think about the border. They had no time for it. The border was an abstraction to them at best. Many citizens of Tijuana crossed it every day to shop for a better cut of meat in San Isidro, or to buy polyester underwear and stretch pants in the second-hand shops and factory outlet stores. Hundreds of women walked through the immigration turnstiles and boarded the red trolleys that fed them into the hills and valleys of San Diego, where they vacuumed and dusted and wiped out toilets and cooked grilled cheese sandwiches in the homes of other women who could afford to hire people to do their household chores for them. And many hundreds of others never went to San Diego at all, never even really looked across the river. They did not have time for returnees. They didn't like all these newcomers who crowded their streets and brought dirt and panic into Tijuana. They suspected all crimes were inspired by these people. All drugs came with them. Old people remembered a day when you could leave your doors unlocked in Tijuana, when you knew all of your neighbors and everyone kept an eye out for each other. Not now, not with these tides of aliens pouring in from everywhere. So Nayeli and Yolo and Vampi came into the hard sun crying and wiping their noses, dirtier than they had ever been, afraid and lonesome and homesick. And nobody cared at all. They walked in a huddle, hugging each other, holding hands. "Taxi," a chubby man called. "Centro." They shook their heads.
"Mamacita,"
a laughing, smoking boy cooed. "Come here." They walked on. Indian women in clothes like Doña Araceli's sold trinkets and chewing gum and held out dark brown palms, making small, mewling begging sounds. Big, hardy Americanos in madras shorts and straw hats and baseball caps and bowling shirts jostled them and marched on, laughing like they always laughed, owning the earth and secure in their mastery. Nayeli wanted what they had, but she did not know what that was. Loudness. No cares at all. Nothing slowed the Americans. Nothing made them silent. Americans did not cower. When Cholos insulted them, they walked through the clouds of anger and hatred as if deaf, as if they didn't have time to hear such foolishness. And if they did hear it, they raised a middle finger or laughed or said something tart and marched into the laughing world. There were so many Americans in Tijuana that she didn't understand what the border was supposed to be. People in the holding pens had told her that it was the same in El Otro Lado, that there were so many Mexicans milling around San Isidro and Chula Vista that it looked like Mazatlan. There were more Mexicans in Los Angeles than there were in Culiacan. She spun in a circle and saw nothing to it but barbed wire and guards. The whole border was the same. Dirt, scrub, dust, stinking desert blankness. With helicopters. Taxi?
No, gracias.
The girls were despondent. Nayeli did not know what to do now. How would she keep her troops going? Had they lost Tacho forever? She did not imagine how she would find him again. How could they go ahead without him? She looked up. Standing at the end of the cracked and upthrust sidewalk, leaning on the staff, one foot planted against the opposite knee, red bandana now gone and shaved head gleaming in the sun, was the warrior.
"I am Atomico," he called.
He leads them through the hot streets, his pole over his right shoulder. Nobody looks at him. They have seen men with poles before. They have seen stranger things than him. And the girls follow in a cluster. Nobody looks at them either. They have seen men with poles leading groups of women. They have seen everything. He stops at a fruit stand carved out of the side of a white and blue building